Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Our next speaker is Molly Singer, who works as a senior research associate at the National Association of Public Hospitals and Health Systems, and her area of expertise is emergency preparedness in public hospitals. So, please.
Good morning. I guess we're waiting for it to load. So I work for the National Public Health and Hospital Institute. It's the research arm of the National Association of Public Hospitals. And I just want to give everybody a little bit of background about what who are NAPH members. They're mostly urban areas. To give you guys an idea, it's Grady Hospital in Atlanta is one of our members, Cook County in Chicago. And our hospitals provide essential community-wide services such as primary care, trauma care, neonatal intensive care. But the most important part is they provide that care regardless of ability to pay. So our hospitals are extremely committed to their communities. One important thing is our hospitals are many times the only level one trauma center in their area. For example, Harborview is the only level one trauma center in the Washington, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho region. So after Hurricane Katrina, Charity Hospital was one of our hospitals. Our board came to us and really said, hey, what are public hospitals doing around emergency preparedness? So we decided to launch a large project, and we did in-depth interviews with 60 NAPH members. Our interviews covered everything from emergency supplies to training to surge capacity. We really kind of wanted to get an environmental scan. One of the most important findings we found is that 25% of the sample had a full-time dedicated emergency preparedness coordinator, and we were really interested what made the decision to have a designated coordinator versus having somebody else with another job take on those responsibilities. And then this is just a graph. The other thing that kind of came up when we looked at this designated coordinator position is that they seem to be very recent positions. Most of the positions came after 2001, and we did find that there was some correlation with 9/11. We also found that increased requirements, such as joint commission requirements and federal government requirements, were causing hospitals to create this position. For an example, joint commission over the last year has increased their mandates on hospitals from two requirements to much more, such as pushing hospitals to stand alone for 96 hours versus 72, and having drills that are coordinated with the community and have community involvement. So the researchers' objectives were to examine the differences in planning strategies between public hospitals that have this designated coordinator position versus those that do not. We also wanted to identify the characteristics that predict or are associated with hospitals that decided to have this position. And then what we wanted to do is, other than using the quantitative data from this 60 interview survey, we also decided to get the qualitative data by querying the subset of the 60 hospitals that had this designated coordinator position. So in the research objective one, just operationalized, we looked at hospitals with a full-time preparedness planner, and then we came up with a couple of variables that we thought were good planning practices. One of those variables was increased emergency equipment, because our hospitals are worried about things like pandemic flu, just making sure that there are caches on hand. Better and more frequent training. We particularly looked at four more types of training practices. Most hospitals do tabletop trainings, drills, and then online competencies. And we wanted to see if hospitals that were doing more than just those three ways of training were associated with having a designated planner. We also looked at increased access to grant funding. Were these hospitals with designated coordinators getting more grant monies? And we did this by doing a binary logistic regression in SPSS, and we controlled for geography, emergency preparedness spending, and bed size, because we didn't want those to interfere. With the objective two, we also just wanted to look at what are all the hospital characteristics that could be associated with this. What would sort of make a hospital want to get a designated coordinator, so we could understand why some of our hospitals did and some of our hospitals didn't. The other thing I want to say is that in the survey, we found that hospitals that did not have a designated EP coordinator put those emergency preparedness responsibilities on somebody that worked in the hospital that had other responsibilities. So it was just an extra piece of a different job requirement, like the safety officer or the head of security in the hospital. So the results of the binary logistic regression, we found that hospitals with a designated emergency preparedness planner were 6 times more likely to use 4 or more learning tools to conduct emergency preparedness trainings. And we thought that was extremely interesting because when we looked at our qualitative data, we found that because of having this designated person, they were thinking about more interesting ways of getting people in the hospital trained, getting them involved. We also found that hospitals with a designated EP planner were 6 times more likely to have a high number of powered air purifying respirators. We asked about a lot of different equipment. We thought this was interesting because of the focus that our hospitals have on pandemic influenza. We also found that hospitals that had designated EP coordinators did not receive more competitive grant funds. And I'm going to go back to this point, actually. When we looked at the hospital characteristics and how they were correlated with having a designated EP coordinator, we did a Pearson chi-square, and I thought that this was, or chi-square, and I thought this was interesting that only one variable came up significant, and that's being a level one trauma center, which you would expect anyway. I did think it was interesting. There was 2 other variables, high bed size and hospital participating in 3 or more external preparedness committees that seemed somewhat significant, but not totally significant. But I think actually the most important thing here is what's not significant, and that's having a hospital located in the Gulf region, which we thought would be highly predictive of having designated coordinator, as well as HRSA funding, which is now ASPR funding, and high level of EP spending. So then we also, as part of the qualitative data, we asked the hospitals that had a designated EP coordinator, you know, why? What are the important things that these people are bringing to your hospitals? And the responses were that these designated coordinators assimilate preparedness into the hospital culture, which a lot of CEOs found was extremely important, customizing preparedness plans and activities to their hospital-specific needs, to serve as liaison with outside preparedness agencies and local community, and I think that this is important too because this goes to a lot of the federal and joint commission requirements that are requiring outside coordination of hospitals as well as coordination with government. And then increased visibility of hospital preparedness efforts. A lot of our hospitals in the survey said that they had a really difficult time getting physicians and nurses and hospital workers to participate in preparedness activities. Because public hospitals, they tend to be extremely full, very low margins, extremely stressed. Getting doctors to pull away from treating underserved patients is difficult. And then some of our results, and this is where I want to go back to the funding issue. Most of our hospitals, when we looked at the funding streams for emergency preparedness, basically got money from ASPR, and that was it. They didn't have a lot of other funds for emergency preparedness. And I know most of you are probably, can I get a show of hands of who's familiar with the ASPR funding? So so the ASPR, the federal grants go to the states and then the states disperse the grants to the hospitals and sometimes not to the hospitals. And we found that a lot of our hospitals had a very different experiences with their state offices. And some would work very collaboratively with the hospitals, but sometimes the state would just buy equipment and then ship it over to the hospital, which didn't really meet the hospital's preparedness needs. The other thing is that this money cannot go to staffing at our hospitals. And so the hospitals would say, yeah, it's great that we have all of these, you know, supplies, but we don't have anybody to coordinate the efforts. And then the other thing is that 93% of the dedicated EP coordinator salaries came directly from hospital administrative funds. And our hospitals have very low margins compared to the industry average. And we thought this was very interesting because it shows that, you know, hospital CEOs and leadership need to make this a priority in order for it to happen. Our conclusions are that the data... That's okay. The data suggests that limitations on the use of federal funding for staff salaries may account for the lack of correlation between hospital spending and the presence of a dedicated coordinator position. And we also think that because the ASPR funds were found to be the most common source of preparedness funding, that maybe these grant guidelines should be revised to support personnel. Finally, some of the limitations of the research is that the data reflects NAPH members hospitals only. We'd be really interested to see how this works out in the private sector. And then the other thing is further research is needed to look at other hospital factors like hospital leadership and other things that might affect having these coordinators. I want to say some special thanks. We did a large report about emergency preparedness in public hospitals, and you can find the report at naph.org. I want to say special thanks to our AVP and VP of Research, Terry Siegel and Linda Cummings, and our research associate, Lindsay Marshall, who helped me with a lot of the data cleaning. I also want to say that I'm employed by NAPH, so I receive a salary for doing this research. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.